Hello and welcome to the 17th episode of Mobile Podcast. Mobile Podcast gives you exclusive insights into the major public interest issues affecting the mobile telecommunications industry. I'm your host, Simon Clark, and in this edition, we'll speak with Professor Peter Wiedemann, a research director at the German Federal Research Center, about risk communication and mobile phone health issues. Professor Peter Wiedemann is an internationally recognized expert in the field of risk communication. He served as a member of the World Health Organization's Task Force on Risk Communication. He was head of the Working Group on Risk Communication for the German Association of Engineers, and he served as president for the Society of Risk Analysis in Europe. Professor Wiedemann is also an elected member of the Non-Ionizing Radiation Group of the National Radiation Protection Commission in Germany. We're privileged to have Professor Peter Wiedemann join us on the program. I spoke earlier with him by telephone from his office in Germany. Professor Wiedemann, welcome to our program.
Yeah, welcome to.
Very good to have you. And if I could start with a quick explanation, if you would, of the study of risk communication and why it's an important matter in the mobile phone health debate.
Yeah, that is interesting. Let me start with, let's say, a quick definition what risk communication is all about. And then I go immediately to your question. Risk communication is in the exchange of information about risks that are obvious, of course. But it's not trivial. It's about people who do the risk assessors on the one side, and on the other side, people who are not really, let's say, knowledgeable about risk issues. It means many decision makers, of course, the news media and the general public and sometimes all the stakeholders. And then, for that reason, the aim of risk communication is the explanation of risk assessment findings. And of course, that is the second aim of risk communication is about consensus finding with respect to risk management decisions. And now I come back to what you asked me. So why is risk communication important for the mobile phone health debate? I guess key issue is here educated decision making. First of all, you know, we live in a democratic society, and I guess in this society or this type of society, so all technology-related decisions have to be accepted by society. And that is especially true if there is any societal debate about any technology, like about potential health effects of the use of mobile phones. So for that reason, I guess government as well as agency and, of course, industry need to know firsthand so how the public perceives the mobile phone technology and what the concerns are.
Indeed, I think we'd understand that people need to come to a consensus view of risk and make those informed decisions. In your research on risk communication, you've discussed the need for more evidence-based communication. What is it exactly that you mean by this?
Well, I guess I'll give you an example. I mean, everyday experience tells us that the Earth is flat. But Earth is a globe. We know that now for several centuries, but it was discovered by science. So science is, in a way, decisive in shaping, let's say, the right answers to issues. And that is also true for risk communication strategies. So the risk communication strategy should be based on the best available scientific evidence.
Which is very important, but I think a lot of people would agree, and I'd like to ask you, the case of people who don't always trust scientists and don't always feel reassured by what scientists tell them, what's the way that has to be dealt with in this sort of complex decision making?
Well, that is not, of course, not easy. There's no easy way, especially in risk communication, if some people have a different view of the risks than science will provide. I guess there are three strategies necessary in a combination of course. First of all, I would call that a trust strategy, a trust gaining or building strategy. That means you have to demonstrate firsthand that you care about people's concern. And of course, you have to demonstrate also that that you are a competent person, that you have the competence to deal with the risk. That's what I call trust strategy. Trust strategy. Then, of course, it has to be combined with you can call that an educational strategy. That means you have to explain science. So that is in the core is it science communication. The explanation of the available risk assessments, the studies, the available scientific evidence. So what does science really know about possible health effects of using mobile phones? So what is the state of science communication? That has to be provided in a form that is credible in a way, so that it reaches the audiences and supports their, let's say, rational decision making or judgment. And the third point or third strategy is what I call consensus reaching strategy. You have to reach consensus about, for instance, fighting decisions within the communities. So it's not only that you educate or inform, you have also to invite them to give their opinions, and then, of course, you have to negotiate if necessary. So consensus reaching strategy is also very important.
Okay, there have been calls for information about the specific absorption rate or SAR levels of mobile phone models to be made more easily and clearly available to consumers. There have been calls for warning labels on packaging so that mobile phone purchasers can be better informed about any risks. Do you think this is necessary, and what sort of impact would this have on the public?
Yeah, quite interesting. I mean, we did some studies about that. And first of all, we have to differentiate between providing SAA information, that is one case, and providing warning labels is a different case. I just address the first strategy, providing SAA information. I would say, yes, you can do that. And if you look at surveys, at least the European surveys I know, the majority of people wish to get this type of information, so would like to get SAA information firsthand. The crucial question, of course, is what could be or what is the effect of providing SAA information? And we have done a study about this, and our study does not suggest that people are, in a way, let's say, reassured if you see they have this information. In many cases, they don't pay attention to this type of information. So you can do that, of course, no question about that. But I would say the effect is rather minor in types of reassuring people or give them a sense of security. That is with respect to providing SAA information. And then the other case is providing information in terms of warning labels. And here I would say, there is no scientific reasons to warn about the use of mobile phones. At least if you look at science, no adverse health effects are confirmed. So you don't have to warn about issues you don't have to warn. That is my opinion. So, and if you do that, that would be viewed or perceived as a sign that there is a real risk. And that would be wrong, of course.
Of course, that's an interesting context in which to move on to another issue, which is the fact that there's been a lot of discussion about implementing the precautionary principle for mobile telecommunications. Can you tell us what impact the precautionary principle, when applied in mobile telephony, would have on public concern about possible risks?
Yeah, I can do that, because we also did some studies about that issue. But let me start with a few remarks about the precautionary principle. That is a risk management strategy, first of all. And the core is the idea, better safe than sorry. That's the core idea of the precautionary principle. So that is what I mentioned before, a non-regret strategy. And with respect to mobile phones or the health concerns about mobile phones, key issue is here that you say even if science has no proof that mobile phones might be a hazard, you can do something to prevent potential hazards. So it's a kind of precautionary strategy. That is in principle okay. But this strategy could have, at least what our data shows, severe side effects, especially if you apply the precautionary principle in order to reduce, let's say, risk concerns or to lower risk perceptions. If you do that, and if you have that in mind, so the effect of informing people about precautionary measures will be, in a way, countervailing effects. That means they are negative. And our study has shown that when people are informed about precautionary measures, about the implementation of precautionary measures, their concerns are rising. You could say, okay, it's not that bad. But we also found out that the information about precautionary principles reduces trust in risk management. And that is very, very bad in a way. So you have, in a way, non-intended effects, non-intended side effects about when you inform people about precautionary measures.
Are there any cultural differences in public perceptions of risk?
Yes, of course. And interestingly, we just, we're currently doing a study in 9 countries all over the world. Either we do that in Brazil, in South Africa, in Europe, that means in the Netherlands, in UK, in Germany, but also in the US, in Japan, in India, and even in Australia, in Australia. And the study is about the effect of informing people about precautionary measures and the impact on risk perception, as I mentioned before. And our data show that, or at least the preliminary results show that informing people about the precautionary principle has no positive effects, or has rather negative impact on risk perception in many, many countries, except India. So India is an exception. So if you, in India, if you inform people about implementing precautionary principle or measures, then you have a reduction risk perception on an increase in trust and risk management, but only in this country. That is an exception.
And that's a remarkable exception. Does the does your work suggest why that might be different in India compared with other countries?
No. We don't have. We have some. Let's say we have some guesses in a way. Maybe there is another type of trust in the in governmental agency or in government policy at all. That could be one thing. So if the government is saying something, that then it might be true. That could be a possible hypothesis, that another type of dealing with authorities, another kind of relationship to authorities, but that has to be in a way tested in a further research.
Look, it's been a really interesting conversation, and I would like to thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Stuart, it was a pleasure. All my pleasure. Pleasure was mine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mobile Podcast would like to thank Professor Peter Wiedemann for taking his time to appear on the program. We'd also like to thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the 17th episode produced in August 2009. Mobile Podcast will be available for download regularly at www.mmfai.org/mobile podcast or www.gsmworld.com/help. Mobile Podcast is made available for download by the Mobile Manufacturers Forum and the GSM Association. The information contained on this podcast is provided for general information purposes only and does not purport to offer legal, health, or any other professional advice. Where reference is made to a company or a specific commercial product or service, howsoever referred, No endorsement or recommendation is implied or intended. The views expressed are those of the speaker alone and do not necessarily represent those of the Mobile Manufacturers Forum or the GSM Association. All guests have volunteered their time to help promote an open discussion of the issues addressed.